Hello, this is your Polycast for Wednesday, November 16th, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio newsroom. On today's edition, President-elect Trump and climate change, and 1 year since the Jamar Clark shooting. Media reports and social media chatter in the past week have painted Donald Trump's victory as a major blow for addressing climate change. The president-elect has rejected climate change science and has promised to roll back policies and agreements aimed at reducing carbon emissions. So what does that mean for a clean energy leader like Minnesota? Elizabeth Dunbar has the story.
A major energy transition is already well underway in Minnesota. We're a top 10 state for wind energy production, and solar panels are going up everywhere. The state's biggest utility, Xcel Energy, plans to shutter two giant coal-fired power generators at its Sherco plant within 10 years, and recently showed off a 1,000-acre solar project just north of the Twin Cities.
The cat is out of the bag for clean energy and energy efficiency.
Michael Noble is executive director of Fresh Energy, a policy organization that has pushed for renewable energy laws in Minnesota. Noble says the price for clean energy has fallen to the point it doesn't make economic sense to go backward.
That being said, I think there's an enormous amount of uncertainty about what will happen at the federal government with, you know, the courts and the Congress and the presidency. But the action has always been at the states anyway, and the action at the states have always been bipartisan.
That's true of the renewable energy standard Minnesota passed back in 2006 under Republican Governor Tim Pawlenty. He also signed a law in 2007 setting greenhouse gas emissions goals. Minnesota is meeting the renewable energy standard, but is lagging on the emissions targets, which apply not just to electricity, but to the state's entire economy. Still, an analysis released earlier this year found that adding even more renewable energy would be cost-effective and would help the state reach its emissions goals. Governor Dayton's administration has talked about strengthening Minnesota's renewable energy law. But with Republicans winning control of the state Senate and retaining control in the House, Dayton would need to put together the same kind of bipartisan coalition that passed the state's current energy laws. David Strom is executive director of the Minnesota Conservative Energy Forum. He says Republicans are not likely to support a more ambitious renewable energy standard.
You can say good things, bad things, and different things about mandates, but you're spitting into the wind because in this current environment, mandates are the wrong way to go.
Strom says most people want a cleaner environment and an improved quality of life, so it's just a matter of figuring out how to get there in the new political context. He says he's seeking common ground with organizations that have supported clean energy mandates in the past. One mandate that's almost sure to go away at the federal level is President Obama's Clean Power Plan. It's a policy the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has been implementing to reduce carbon emissions from power plants. President-elect Trump has promised to get rid of it. Yet utilities will likely continue retiring coal-fired power plants without the Clean Power Plan because some of them are becoming too expensive to run.
What Trump is if anything, a last hurrah for the fossil fuel industry, not a change in permanent direction.
DFL Senator John Marty of Roseville has been a leader in energy issues at the state capitol.
Because it doesn't work. It just can't continue that way. It's not sustainable. If you're talking about what's good for children and grandchildren, great-grandchildren, you got to be concerned about whether you can keep doing what you're doing, and we can't.
Republican House member Jim Neuberger of Becker says lawmakers will have a lot of things to consider when weighing changes in the state's energy policy.
I'm constantly talking to people about energy, and that is having reliable, affordable energy in the most responsible manner is what I'm hearing from people all over the state.
Neuberger, whose district includes Xcel's Sherco plant, has adopted this mantra with other House Republicans, cleaner and cheaper. And now they and Governor Dayton will have to settle on what that looks like. Reporting on the environment, Elizabeth Dunbar, Minnesota Public Radio News.
A year ago tonight, Jamar Clark died. Doctors at Hennepin County Medical Center took the 24-year-old African-American man off life support the day after a Minneapolis police officer shot him in the head. Clark's death prompted an 18-day occupation outside a North Minneapolis police station. And last night, about 150 people returned there to remember Clark and renew their call for the officer's prosecution. Matt Sepik reports.
As people clutching candles gathered on Plymouth Avenue North in front of the home where a police officer fatally shot Jamar Clark, his father, James Clark, told the crowd it's hard to believe that it's been a year.
It just hurts every day that I wake up. I don't see him around anymore. And I just don't know. The only thing we can do is just stick together like we've been doing and pray and hope God sees fit to turn this thing around because it needs to be turned.
Clark expressed a glimmer of optimism that sustained public attention to his son's killing might eventually lead to an end to police killings of unarmed people. Investigators found no weapons on Clark, but they also said Clark had a hand on an officer's gun while the two were on the ground. Hennepin County Attorney Mike Freeman found officers Mark Ringenberg and Dustin Schwarzy were justified in using deadly force and did not charge them. 64-year-old Tanae Wells was among those at last night's vigil. They released black and red balloons in Clark's honor before marching several blocks to the 4th Precinct Police Station. Wells of North Minneapolis is not optimistic that tensions between police and communities of color will ease. She says the election of Donald Trump, who's called for law and order, has left her demoralized. Wells fears young black men will continue to die in similar confrontations.
We will not see change until we are ready to sacrifice who we are and the comforts of our lives to stop the madness of killing people. It won't stop. It's going to get worse.
Former Minneapolis NAACP President Nikema Levy-Pounds, a leader of last year's protests, was at the 4th Precinct earlier yesterday to announce her bid for mayor. She says now people from a variety of religious, racial, and socioeconomic backgrounds are fighting together for racial equity.
There's been more pressure on the Minneapolis Police Department than I think they've experienced throughout the entire time that they've been in existence. And going to City Hall, we have on many occasions crowded the chambers of City Hall and we've demanded justice.
Two blocks down Plymouth Avenue North at the Minneapolis Urban League, President Stephen Belton said Jamar Clark's killing a year ago and the fatal police shooting of Philando Castile in Falcon Heights last summer brought context and attention to Minnesota's worst in the nation racial disparities.
And I think some people of goodwill said, what can we do about this? Do we have a stake in this? Are we doing the best that we can? Are we giving our best efforts? And of course, the answer to those questions is no, we were not.
Belton remains frustrated by what he calls the serial dismissal of accounts from black witnesses that Clark was handcuffed when he was shot. Investigators said there's no evidence he was. And Belton says the failure of authorities to hold the officers accountable. But he says some changes within the MPD offer reasons for hope. He points out, as did Mayor Betsy Hodges in a statement this week, that everyone on the force must undergo implicit bias training. And after a 3-year evaluation period, all officers are now wearing body cams. Minneapolis Police Federation President Bob Kroll insists the officers did nothing wrong, but Kroll shares Belton's optimism that body cams could decrease tensions between police and the public.
It'll take you inside the eyes of what police see and deal with it a lot of times. And as a result, I think complaints and lawsuits will drop. The officers are subject to more scrutiny now than more than ever. And I think they're acting accordingly.
Meanwhile, prosecutors are moving forward with cases against 4 men accused in an attack on protesters near the 4th Precinct last November 23rd. 3 are due in court Tuesday. 24-year-old Lance Scarsella, who allegedly shot and wounded 5 people that night, remains jailed and is scheduled to stand trial in January on multiple assault charges. With reporting from Brant Williams, I'm Matt Sepik, Minnesota Public Radio News, Minneapolis.
And that's your Polycast for this Wednesday, your daily check-in on Minnesota politics. I'm Mike Mulcahy in the Minnesota Public Radio Newsroom.